Author of the Week, with Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and of course, another sensationally talented purveyor of perfect prose.
But who's the author?
Let's find out.
Actor, general all-round wonderful comedian, awesome best-selling novelist, and now she's explaining the step-by-step guide as to how to do an audiobook. This woman is just amazing, and we're delighted to welcome as author of the week to the particular feature, the amazing Jennifer Lieberman. How are you, Jennifer?
I'm fabulous, Alex. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Well, it's great to have you on board, and certainly it's a fascinating field because certainly the last decade has seen an exponential growth in terms of audiobooks. I mean, it seems as though you just writing the book in some instances was, that was it, we've written the book. But now there's going to be an audiobook as well. So a much timely and needed guide to the whole process. Share with us why you decided to actually produce this awesome text.
Well, a colleague of mine suggested that I record my audiobook. This was during the beginning of the pandemic. She knew that I was launching my novel upcoming. It was about 6 months to 8 months out from the novel being launched. And she strongly suggested that I had to do an audiobook. And it's like you mentioned, in the past 10 years, they've exploded. And I feel like because of audiobooks, people are consuming literature more than ever. I want to say they're reading books more than ever, but they're listening. They're consuming literature. They're not necessarily reading, but they are listening to books. So it is kind of a necessity now if you have a book. So she convinced me to do it. And I was stuck at home in Maple, Canada, which is where I'm from originally. And I just kind of had a go at doing it on my own. I Googled some stuff, researched some stuff, and kind of made a little cocoon to record in that was soundproof. And I messed up so much. I actually recorded the whole book once and then had to throw everything away and start from scratch. And I learned a lot of lessons. So it took me double the amount of time it would have taken. It took about 2 months to record the entire audiobook because also you cannot do it in one sitting. And even if you can do a couple of chapters at a time, it's not very realistic because your voice gets tired. Your voice starts to hurt. It's not realistic for anybody to be speaking for an hour straight without breaks or stops or somebody else coming in and adding to the conversation. So you really have to pace yourself and time it out so you don't injure your voice. And so it took a couple of months and then I had to throw everything in the garbage. And then it was another couple of months to do it all over again. And I spoke to this colleague again. Her name is Stacey Demalski. She's wonderful. She has a company called The Memoir Midwife. And she's been a big help to me at getting my stories out there. And she was like, oh, perfect. Now it sounds like you're in the perfect position to write a how-to book so other authors don't have to make the same mistakes you made. So that's literally how it came about.
Precisely. It just opens up a whole range of things there. Now, one of the sort of sublying themes of Author of the Week is obviously the place in the globe of Jessica Burtis. Sometimes she's in Ireland. Sometimes she's in North Carolina. Today she's in North Carolina. So big rejoicing in terms of obviously what's happening on the North American scenario. Jessica, welcome to Author of the Week. Welcome back to Author of the Week. I gather your mum was emotionally overwhelmed when you returned and suddenly they could actually say Jessica Burtis has come back home.
Yeah, she was missing me really bad and she wanted me home. And it was really nice seeing her at the airport. Of course, everything looks very different now. I'm not sure where you are right now, if you're up in Canada, but it's the eastern seaboard. The trees are just lovely. And it's just beautiful seeing America again. I missed it, honestly. And I chugged sweet tea the first day I got back. So, you know, I it was my homecoming.
It's fair to say, Jennifer, that Jessica will be featuring sweet tea in her first great American novel when it has actually completed. And obviously she'll be turning to good self to do the vocal talents from that. But Jessica, let's turn to your good self. Any questions you'd like to put to Jennifer at the moment about life and times and, of course, some of the awesome things she's been involved with?
I feel like there's so many things I could ask you about. I loved reading about the audiobook project you're going on because I love audiobooks. And then the stage performances that you've done. So I'm curious, what have you been doing in the pandemic aside from the audiobook? Like, have you been doing any projects for yourself? Do you have any plans in the future?
So the one thing I started during the pandemic was a vlog where I interview other authors. And it's called I Never Thought I Would. I was very isolated, like most of us were, and I was antsy to connect with other creatives. And I know how hard it is for authors to get the word out about their books. So I created a vlog. It's called I Never Thought I Would. The cost of entry is telling an inspirational story about how doing something that you never thought you would do led you to some sort of breakthrough or success in your life. It doesn't have to be book related. It doesn't have to be career related. It could be anything, because even sometimes when we get outside of ourselves in our personal life, it just kind of opens doors in our mind that we didn't think we were able to walk through. And then that spills over into all the other aspects of our life. So that's been the main thing that I've been doing. I did have the opportunity to work on a short film called Ship It during the pandemic. We did it via Zoom. So all of the actors were in different cities and dispersed all over the place. And that was a lot of fun. It's been doing the festival circuit, but it's been a lot of just interviews and promoting both my novel and this how-to book. But I'm itching to get back to performance and to get back on stage, that's for sure.
I'm just intrigued by the Bill Murray experience in 2017. I mean, did he put in an appearance? Was it a case of, was there something which you just thought, well, it's Bill Murray, for goodness sakes?
That was an interesting production. I was only involved with the first little bit of it.
So the crucial bit, Jennifer, the crucial bit.
Well, it's a documentary. So a very good friend of mine had this idea to try and track down Bill Murray to have a Bill Murray experience. And unfortunately, through the process, several friendships fell apart. So the group of four girlfriends who started off at the beginning of the film, very early on, were no longer friends with each other. So the woman making the movie went forward and continued it without us.
Well, it's her loss. That's all I can say.
So,
let's move on. You can put that down to another audiobook, you know, and another sort of experience from that side of things. It's very important. I know. We've been through all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Let's turn to one of our graduate students now. She's a graduate from the University of Lincoln, doing all sorts of other bits and pieces. Eloise Sheehan. Eloise, are you an audiobook consumer?
Honestly, I don't think I've ever listened to an audiobook. I do prefer to read them, but I am open-minded about that. Yeah, I was just wondering, Jennifer, what made you want to go from the sort of the performance side to the author, or have you always dabbled in both?
So I've always been a writer. I started writing when I was about 8 years old. Funnily enough, I wanted to be Zach Morris's girlfriend on Saved by the Bell. So I started like daydreaming up episodes of Saved by the Bell that I could like insert myself into. And then by the time I was 12, I started writing screenplays and scripts. So I started off writing myself into TV shows I used to watch. And then as I got older, you know, my imagination evolved into creating my own characters and my own stories. So the writing was always there, but it was always for the purpose of performance. And then when I was in Los Angeles, somebody suggested I created a one-woman show as a vehicle to showcase my range. I played 10 characters, different accents, different genders, different ages. And of course, a story arc. There was comedy, there was drama, there was all the feels. And after that piece won an award in New York, somebody suggested that it would be a great novel. The title changed because I had some censorship issues, but the original title was Year of the Slut. And it's a feminist piece, a sex positive piece, and a coming of age story. So the play was wildly successful. And it was based on the title alone. So many people had like immediate reactions, like this would be a great book. This would be a great book. So I never really intended to write a book. There were so many things in my career that I never intended to do, which is kind of why that's, I called my blog, the vlog, I never thought I would, because so much of my success and opportunity came from when I stretched myself and somebody would suggest like, oh, you should do a one-woman show. Never thought I would do a one-woman show. I had produced 2 one-woman shows the year prior and resolved that I wasn't ever good enough to do something like that. But then when somebody kind of pushed me and said, oh no, this could be your in, this could be an opportunity. I always kind of rose to the occasion. So stand-up comedy is one of those things. Writing the novel is one of those things. In the creative field, but I think in life in general, we never know where our success is going to come from. And if we just keep doing the same thing over and over again, and we're not getting to where we want to go, sometimes we have to pivot or stretch ourselves. So that's kind of how it happened.
Certainly opens up a whole range of other factors. Eloise, of course, and Jessica are both seasoned pros when it comes to the Midweek Drive, and indeed are regular contributions from that point of view. Madison, relatively new to the whole experience, but she's catching up quickly. She's a level 2 journalist student at the University of Lincoln from Birmingham, England, not Alabama. But Madison, any questions that you'd like to put to Jennifer at the moment?
So you're an actor and a writer, and also you did like, my internet's bad, stand-up comedy and that. I was just wondering how you keep yourself motivated to do all that and how you get the time and energy for all of it as well.
I just love the creative process. So it fuels me. Like I get excited. I get excited about my writing and I love to be on stage. I love to perform. So for me, it doesn't feel like it's work. It feels like it's just what I do and who I am. It's interesting because I feel like when you're a creative, it's not your work, it's your life. It's just kind of your personality. It comes with you everywhere you go. You never get a day off because you never know when an idea is going to come and you're going to have to start writing it down furiously so you don't lose it. So, and that's the thing. Like I don't push myself when I'm not motivated. Like people love to ask about writer's block. I never have writer's block because if I don't have the impulse or the, you know, the fire burning inside of me to write something that day, I'm not going to write.
I'm fascinated, Jennifer, by your other text, of course, which is How to Master Your Virtual Meeting in 7 Simple Steps, because this is wearing your hat as a filmmaker and a producer, yeah, as opposed to obviously the award-winning acting that we've already heard about. 7-step approach to actually deal with business executives and coaching things, etc. I mean, we've all been through, I think, the equivalent of 10 years of digital development in the last 18 or so months. But what's the kind of most challenging experience you've actually had when you were talking about coming to terms and actually mastering your virtual meeting? Is it a case of people will not have decent microphones, they don't use decent backdrops, there are all sorts of things, or where do you start? And other moments where you just think, what are you doing?
Yes, well, the technical aspect of it is pretty rudimentary. In terms of it's pretty easy to get your setup. It's the other stuff. It's the being on camera and being able to be dynamic and engage that I when I was working with a few executives, that's what I saw their biggest problems were. That's why I was recommended to work with them. So it was more of the performance aspect and habits, little idiosyncrasies that people don't really notice when you're in a room, but when a camera is close up on your face, things that would kind of fall by the wayside in a boardroom or in a presentation are really amplified on camera. So it's getting to know your own behavior and your own habits in order to be really effective. And I kind of go through some acting lessons in terms of like motivation and what you want to achieve and infusing your different parts of your presentation with active verbs and motivations. So that is usually the most challenging thing. The easiest thing is to get a backdrop, get a ring light, and get a little microphone. All of those are so accessible now. You can order them on Amazon and have them within 24 hours in most places, depending on where you live. So it's just that performance aspect and staying dynamic and people keeping people engaged. Because the other thing too is when you're on Zoom, nobody knows kind of what you're doing under the desk. You know, people can be texting, people can be, you know, reading a magazine or doing something else. So they can even have other things up on their screen and multitasking. And you really want to engage people and have them there with you in the room, so to speak, even though you're all in different rooms.
I actually think that, again, that's fairly important. Indeed, as you've been saying, that sort of notion of choosing the backdrop, getting the backdrop appropriate, ensuring that everything is actually there. Clearly, this is a radio program, so first and foremost, we're concerned about the audio. But there's nothing wrong with actually swapping your backdrop every so often and actually getting, you know, a really sort of different backdrop within there. You know, it's important. And then if one wished to actually sort of even adds to the history of the whole thing, just go all over the place with respect to backdrops. I mean, you know, it just helps kind of break it up, I find. It's just a minor point. Or obviously, always remembering to ensure the thing is actually processed. Eloise, of course, has got it completely right, because she just goes into the Zoom dark room and just basically sort of refuses to acknowledge anything for that body, which is great. It's fantastic. Anyway, Jessica, back to yourself. Any other questions for Jennifer?
I'm very curious about how you found kind of trying to communicate the lessons that you've learned. Like, was it very hard to kind of make them into that format where you're trying to get them across to people rather than just knowing that yourself or just writing a book? I feel like it'd be very hard to write something instructional. It seems like a very different type of writing.
So I've been teaching for a really long time. I used to be the performing arts director at an elementary school. Before that, I was running a children's acting program for several years. And especially when you're teaching children, you just kind of have to break it down into the simplest form.
Same thing with business executives, Jennifer. Same thing with business executives, you know.
And about almost 10 years ago in 2012, I started a company called Make Your Own Break, which all of the how-to books I have are under that title of Make Your Own Break. Because like I was saying before, a lot of my success came from me creating my own projects, creating my own one woman show, making a web series, making some short films. So I realized it was so hard for me to like break into the business in the traditional sense, but creating things for myself got me attention and got me other jobs and led to other opportunities. And I felt like I wasted several years trying to get my foot in the door in the traditional way, when if I was just creating my own projects all of that time, I would have gotten a little further, a little faster. So I developed workshops like producing 101 for film, producing 101 for theater, how to develop your own solo show, because my background, I started producing very young. I was running a theater company in New York City by the time I was 22 years old. By accident, I got in as an actor and the producer left and they asked me to pick up the slack. And I said, no, I have no desire to be a producer, especially like if I'm the producer, I can't be in the plays, forget it. And eventually they convinced me to do it and that I could still be in the plays if I produced them. And I didn't know, I wasn't a very good producer back then, but I learned just by trial and error. And I was probably a nightmare to work with because I didn't know how to handle the stress when I was that young either. But
just because you reach for a Kalashnikov rifle and actually threaten to shoot people, that's mine. Don't worry about that. You were just kind of emphasizing the point. That's all, really.
Yeah. So basically after producing for several years, I figured like, oh, I could really teach this to other people so they can take control. Because I feel like the worst thing about being an actor is you're waiting to get picked. And it's such a collaborative medium. Like I used to always joke, like I wish I was a painter because then I just needed to go to the store and buy some paints and a canvas and I could do my art. Whereas with performance, you need a script, you need a director, you need an audience, you need other people to collaborate with. So waiting around was kind of the worst thing, like stewing in my own frustration. So in a long-winded roundabout way, Jessica, that is how I became proficient at explaining it to other people and explaining how to do it.
I'm personally just waiting for the audiobook, which is Jennifer Lieberman, My Life Story, basically, or how I actually got from A to Z in several easy steps and so on. Good to see that Eloise has actually turned her camera on now, although I appreciate for the radio listener, it makes no difference whatsoever, but it's always nice. Eloise, back with you again. And I mean, as you, somebody who's, again, you've crossed over in your own sort of background, and you're obviously in the process of creating a whole new experience in your personal life at present. But with respect to your graduating from American studies, then doing an MA and being on film sets, etc. Any thoughts that you'd like to share?
I'd like to say that I never did American studies, Alex. It's kind of hurtful that you forgot what my degree
is.
It's
film studies.
I'll forgive you.
It's film studies. It's quite all right. I've been having one of those weeks. As Madison will tell you, I did a whole piece on Zoom literally about 48 hours ago and then realized there was a glitch on the recording thing, which basically meant the whole thing was hopeless. It's all right, Jennifer. Don't worry. We've checked it out now. This is fine, honestly. Anyway, Eloise.
I was just going to ask Jennifer, how do you think was the best way about achieving your goals? Because obviously at 22, running what you were doing is incredible. So how would you go about explaining how to do that to someone?
Be open to the opportunities that present themselves to you. I spent so much of my life like banging my head against a wall because I used to be more rigid and I wanted things to be a certain way and I was only willing to do certain types of work. And being rigid does not serve you at all. And sometimes opportunities present themselves and it seems too easy. It's like, oh no, that's too easy. Like, I don't want to do that. That's not the type of performer I am or the type of artist I am. But I've learned over the years to say yes more often to things that can stretch me. There is power in no. There's definitely power in no. And I'm not saying to just say yes to everything and run around like a chicken with its head cut off because you're just trying to be everything to everyone. But someone suggested I start doing stand-up comedy about 6 or 7 years before I actually did. Because at the time I was like, no, I'm a serious actor. I'm a serious theater actor. I'm not a stand-up comedian. I'm not funny. Turns out I'm really funny. But I never knew I was funny. And I think sometimes we paint ourselves into a box and it's a disservice to us. So Eloise, I would say just be open to opportunities and there's no shame in trying something and saying that's not for me. It's better to try something and realize that it's not for you than to never try it at all when that might have been something that you really enjoyed or excelled at. I'm loving all the backgrounds.
Yeah. Honestly, it's not because I'm bored. It's all important. It's got a critical way forward. Year of the Slut, very important. New York City. We run a companion series called New York Real Talk with Pamela Sue Mann. I'm just thinking, Jennifer, you would be ideal for that. But how did you find the New York audiences in terms of comedy? Because I would have thought they can be a hard-nosed bunch, those New Yorkers. You know, they can, I mean, and particularly if you let slip that you're from Canada, I mean, that could have been, you know, almost a one-way trip to excommunication, perhaps.
Well, I'm quite self-deprecating, so I poke fun at myself about the Canadian thing. That's kind of how I open it.
You don't mean to tell me you have a line about a boot and a bounce, do you, surely?
No, I don't, but I'm from a small town called Maple, so I joke about how the streets flow with maple syrup as we canoe down them to work and school. New York... I lived in New York long enough that I had a sense of what the audiences are looking for there. And, you know, I have a balance between some blue comedy and then some political comedy. I started off quite blue. I think a lot of comedians do, because it's just kind of easy. And I was so nervous at the time. And I was just like, oh, you know, I'm great at dirty jokes. I can tell a whole bunch of those. And then as I evolved, as I got more into the scene and I evolved as a comedian, I was like, you know what? I get a chance to stand on stage for whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, depends on the show that I'm booked on. And I wanted to use it to talk about things that were important to me. So as long as it's funny, as long as you're funny, you can talk about anything. Nobody wants to be, you know, reprimanded or preached to about their decisions or about the environment. But if you can make it funny, you can say almost anything.
Not sure whether Donald Trump or Boris Johnson would necessarily be appropriate sort of figures for that. And there are a lot of other sort of folk who might wear that, but at least there's an I Heart New York t-shirt that I believe you're actually wearing there just to prove that, yes, you do. And it was a whole wondrous experience. Okay, Jessica, back with yourself again. Obviously, as we've said frequently, your North Carolina background with respect to sweet tea and boiled peanuts is a whole new world. Add maple syrup to that mix, Jennifer, and I think you could be on a winner.
Yes.
Jennifer's nodding there. I don't know if she hasn't got a question. Maybe she's just sort of stunned into silence on that basis. Anything you'd like to add, Jessica?
I'm curious about what your plans are for the rest of November, if you're going to be doing any new projects or starting anything that's kind of for the new year.
So I have a few writing projects in the works right now. I have the sequel to Year of the What. I have book two. So I had to change the title, as I mentioned. So now all the books are going to be under the Year of the What umbrella, book one, book two, book three, because there's three of them. So book two is Year of the Bitch. And basically I've decided to take words that are pejoratives, they're weapons that people like to attack women with. And when females are younger, in our teens and our 20s, slut is kind of the go-to word if you want to attack a woman or degrade her, put her down. And as we get older, the word slut is replaced with the word bitch. So it's following the same character, Dana, along her travels. And this is between 5-8 years in the future. The book is going to, you know, even in Year of the What, the first one, it's 1 year, but we go through some flashbacks because we have to see what she went through in order to get to where she is. So yes, Year of the Bitch is going to be fast forward in the future a little bit, where she's had to take on some greater responsibilities in her life and in positions of having to delegate and tell people what to do and assert herself more. And we see how she navigates that world. So that's one of them. And then another thing I'm working on is I'm working on a piece about a homeless woman, because the homeless situation, I'm not sure what it's like in the UK right now, but the homeless situation in so many big cities in Canada and the United States is out of control in a way that I've never seen anything like it. So my kind of thesis on the subject matter is that it's a mental illness problem. It's not a housing problem. And as long as we keep talking about the housing problem, we're never going to actually solve the real problem, which is mental illness. So I'm writing a play about that right now.
It's an interesting topic, Jennifer, because certainly the movie Nomadland, directed by Chloe Zhao and based on the novel, the same name again, talks about a new era for American folk where they don't see it as being homeless, they see it as being houseless. And in many cases, some people have actually chosen to actually adopt a houseless approach as opposed to being homeless. But it is, again, a challenging time, certainly on both sides of the Atlantic. And maybe, again, it's something which needs to be addressed and discussed in all sorts of ways. Madison, briefly, from your own perspective, listening in on the whole thing, I think this has actually been the biggest number we've actually had in your Zoomers so far. So, Madison, any other questions you'd like to put to Jennifer?
I think it's really interesting that one of your projects is on homelessness because, especially in Lincoln, not Lincoln, Nebraska, but Lincoln, England, homelessness is a really big issue. And obviously, Year of the What as well, you're on about feminism and like topics that aren't usually discussed in the rom-com genre. So do you purposely choose to talk about topics that interest you and are important to you?
Yes, definitely. You know, Year of the Slut is something that I outgrew quite quickly, but I had put so much work into it that I was committed to seeing it through. But yes, I always work on subjects that are close to my heart. So I actually have two friends who have relatives that are homeless and on the street, not because they are houseless, but one is schizophrenic and one has bipolar disorder. So I've seen these friends struggle for years trying to get their relatives help. And then at a certain point in time, they just had to, for their own mental health, for their own well-being, they just had to let it be. And in the piece that I'm writing, I am writing about what would it take for somebody like you or somebody like I to end up on the street. And basically my premise is every single friend and family member has to say, I can't deal with you anymore. Because it's not an overnight process where somebody ends up on the street. You can lose your job, you can be out of work for a little while, okay, then you can't pay your rent anymore. Most people have a friend or a relative that they can crash with for a while until they get back on their feet. So the play that I'm writing spans a 20-year span to show how a normal woman, whatever normal means, but how a regular woman who is a wife, who is a mother with children, goes through a deterioration and finally ends up as a homeless woman on the street, eventually addicted to drugs, and the trajectory of how somebody gets there because everybody had to forsake them and the system had to fail. And one of my major topics is there's a mental health act that was enacted in the 60s that says that nobody can be kept in an institution against their will unless they commit an act of violence and it's court ordered. And this has been a huge issue because families can't get their relatives the help that they need because a lot of people don't want to stay in the institution and get the help they need. They don't realize they need help. They don't think they need to be on their meds. So that's more of the point of view that I'm addressing. Thank you for the question, Eloise.
Madison. It's okay. Don't worry, Jennifer. I mean, it's just one of those basic 101 skills, just making sure you get the right question. It's okay. It's all fine. But a very poignant and important one there. And tying in, of course, with somebody we're going to after we finish this particular piece in a few moments. That's Catherine Tilsley, actress from Coronation Street. Are you familiar with Coronation Street, Jennifer Lieberman, at all?
Yes, I am. Actually, I know an actress, Zoe Croft, who is on that show.
Well, there we are. Well, Catherine's going to be talking about how public houses and pubs can also serve as a useful sort of adjunct to mental health issues and other areas as well. It's a whole fascinating thing. We'll go to that later. But Jennifer, allowing for the fact that just looking at the whole thing, how to record and publish your audiobook in 7 simple steps is available now. It's an Amazon.com number one bestseller and is available from that point of view. What's the best way to actually follow your good self, Jennifer? I mean, are you a Twitter person? Are you an Instagram gal? Are you a Facebook thing? Is it a case of just go to JenniferLiebermanActor.com? Where would you actually sort of point the fans?
Yes. So across all social media, my handle is I am Jen Lieberman. So you can find me. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. The best way to stay in touch is to sign up for my newsletter, which you can enroll in on the website, JenniferLiebermanActor.com. And I don't send them out every week. I send them out every couple of months or whenever I have an event or something new happening. That will let you know about performances, stand-up comedy shows, events. So if anybody's interested, that's the best way, but definitely follow me on social media. I'm not the best with social media. I've kind of had screen exhaustion the past several months since the pandemic, you know, forced us all on screen so much. I've been making a concerted effort to be off of my screen as much as possible, but I am on from time to time, and I'd love to connect with anybody out there who's interested.
Fantastic stuff. And I love the notion you have, I am Jennifer Lieberman, because you are. Fantastic. It just says it all. You know, you are. No messing about that. Jennifer, we've got 2 final questions to wrap up with, and I'll throw them to you in this particular instance. First of all, I'll go for 3. Would you like to give us a score out of 10 for how we've handled this particular Zoomer on the Midweek Drive today? Because I think, you know, obviously you've produced the ultimate guide to the Zoom and screen-based things, etc. I've thrown in a few sort of screen changes, etc. But how has it been for you overall? Do you think as though we managed it effectively?
You definitely get a 9.5 out of 10. You all have had such great questions, such great energy, very engaging. And that's the most important thing. Like I said, the backdrop is, you know, secondary. It's all about the energy you bring to the table and how you engage. So all of you were fabulous today.
Well, there you go. You're proving that even Birmingham gals can actually be positive. I keep saying this, Madison, it'll work well. Honestly, we spend a lot of time with Katie Grimerson. We'll do the same with yourself. It's all good. Next 2 questions, I'll actually throw to Jessica and Eloise. They can ask you one each. Jessica, first question, please, from you.
Jennifer, have you had a relatively interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes, definitely. I have. You've asked such great questions. So I'm so grateful.
We don't want to hype it up too much. So relatively interesting was fine. You know, that's okay. That's good. And 9.5, we'll take that. That's great. Eloise, what's yours?
I've got to try and get this right now. I've not been on the Midweek Drive for about a year. If I'm correct, will you be joining us again in the future?
Yeah. I would love to join you again in the future. I hope so.
There we are. Jennifer Lieberman will return, as hopefully will Jessica Bertus, Madison Bowen, and Eloise Sheehan. That is a wrap. And of course, remember, year of the what?
Jessica Bertus, flying the flag for North Carolina across the solar system.
Did you know that in 1991, a bill was passed by the North Carolina Senate changing the official proportions of the state flag from a length 1/3 more than its width to a length 1/2 more than its width?
Wow, there must not be a lot going on in the North Carolina Senate for them to have that kind of time on their hands.
Well, the Great British Pub, clearly something which is absolutely critical in terms of our overall cultural experience of life and the universe and various other factors. And indeed, there does seem to be a case of needing to actually know the importance of pub landlords to their local communities. Now, to actually talk us through some of the sort of aspects of this and how actually community spirit is maintained with respect to the pub landlord in also many ways, we're delighted to welcome, first and foremost, actress extraordinaire, who was indeed Corrie's best barmaid ever. It's Catherine Tilsley. How are you, Catherine?
What an intro. I'm great. Thank you, darling. How are you?
Excellent stuff. And delighted to connect with your good self. And we've also got a fine surrogate, again, from the landlord's environment yourself. This, of course, is a wonderful soul who is so, so great. I'm going to ask him to introduce himself. So off you go, sir. Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Terry Reek, and I'm a general manager for Brinking.
Fantastic. Okay, Terry. No relation to Diana Rigg. I just wanted to clarify that at the start, really.
Fortunately not.
That's okay. That's fine. Catherine, let's turn to you first, because obviously as an actress, you portrayed a barmaid from that point of view. And that is in some ways the kind of archetypal, almost illusionary notion of the whole thing. But as with all sorts of things, there's an element of fact that comes across in this as well. So what did you think about this finding about landlord knowledge in the pub environment?
Well, long before I was in The Rover's Return, I was a barmaid for 2 years. So it's a sector that I'm very familiar with and very passionate about. I loved my job as a barmaid. So, you know, becoming part of this campaign was really important to me. Green King local pubs have come up with the most fantastic idea. I mean, Terry will tell you more about it, but basically, you know, giving the extra training to landlords and landladies and bar staff to improve things like memory, which they're already brilliant at, you know, in terms of drinks orders and getting to know people. But right at the forefront is mental health, which is a big part of the reason I came on board. Through this training, they're enabling the bar staff to spot signs of anxiety and depression and to help people from all walks of life, which I just think is wonderful.
Terry, turning back to yourself again, I mean, fascinated to see that 3/4 of pub managers know more people locally than the average resident. They're obviously fountains of local insight, and apparently it only takes 5 visits for a landlord to learn your name. I thought it was the Cheers bar in Boston where everybody knew your name, but obviously in Britain, it's a different line entirely.
Oh, yeah, it's 5 visits and we get to know your name, what's your favourite drink, and in chatting over the bar, get to know more about you and your family, your jobs. Yeah, it's very knowledgeable help.
So share with us, Terry, this training programme in which you're using a number of memory tricks to help landlords improve even that number of times to actually visit you and actually sort of get to know your name even sooner.
Yes, it's little tricks how to pinpoint different the customer's name to different memories. And it just gives you knowledge of how to spot different signs. And also with our team as well, we can spot things. If our teams aren't 100% right, we know how to do that. And I think I've done a test with my colleagues. And I think it's about 4 times now a visit, and they can remember customers' names.
So, Catherine, clearly within the acting world, I'm sure you'll have had the cliched question put to you. So how do you remember all those lines? Do you actually have any memory sort of approaches that have also kind of helped you, which maybe, I don't know, Green King could adapt?
Well, I think for me, I don't know whether it is slightly different. For me, it's repetition. But I suppose once you do have your locals coming in all the time, of course you learn more about them. And you know, I got to know what people wanted straight away. There were certain people that would come into our pub. I'd know what they wanted to drink. I'd know what they wanted to eat. I could tell you what time they'd go home, if they were in a bad mood or a good mood. You get such an insight to people's lives with that job. And hats off to all landlords and landladies, because they work incredibly hard. And I think what Green King have done with this now is given their pubs the edge. You know, our local Green King pub is very family orientated. It is a community hub, and there are things constantly happening: family days, sports days, quiz nights, things like that, which is, it's wonderful. And we've all been craving that over the past 18 months, I think.
Terry, we've featured a number of actors who portrayed a bar staff, etc. Probably one of the most regular is Armin Shimerman, who plays, of course, the character of Quark in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Now, that's set in the far future, but in terms of yourself, Terry, what sort of things have you learned and appreciated as you've been developing from your landlord work to general manager, right the way through to, obviously, now being media superstar?
Yeah, for me, it's... I just love my job. I love going into work. I love being part of the customer's life. So everything from their birthday celebrations, having a bad day, we get to talk about that, to weddings, and just also hosting events for like friendship groups. So some of our older residents, we host a monthly get together where if they're on their own, they can come in and have a chat in the pub with us and our staff. And it's just, I'm a massive people person, so I just buzz off talking to people and getting to know about different people and what's going on in the community.
It's more a social worker as opposed to anything else from that point of view. Catherine, let's turn to you, to your good self. Finally, where can people go to find out further details about this fabulous Green King package and the ways in which, obviously, the pub community is being maintained and even improved upon in terms of human beings as opposed to robots?
Absolutely. Check them out. You can head over to their website. That is greenkingpubs.co.uk. And you can just pop your postcode in and it will tell you where your nearest Green King pubs are.
Catherine Tilsley, it's been hugely wonderful to connect with your good self. And I switched the camera on because I thought, well, you might as well sort of see the shock. And then you can actually sort of remember the name and all sorts of other bits and pieces. Terry, likewise, Terry Rigg from Green King and Catherine Tilsley, huge thanks. And when you finish this day of media routines, Catherine, will you be off to the pub or will it be a case of, no, I've got to focus on my acting career?
I have actually got lines to learn tonight, but I'll definitely be off to the pub at some point next week.
Well, there you are. And what about yourself, Terry? Is it back behind the bar for yourself?
Back behind the bar tonight. We've got a full pub tonight for Christmas parties.
Well, there you go. Terry Rigg, Catherine Tilsley, huge thanks. Be well and cheers.
Thank you.
Well, if you've got a pet, you might sort of think, oh, I'll just keep the heating on to keep it warm. What? That's just one of the areas maybe people need to think about in terms of how can you actually save energy and also save money as well from that point of view. And we're delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals to actually talk about this. First of all, it's always a delight to welcome back the awesomeness that is consumer expert Alice Beer. How are you, Alice?
I'm very good, especially awesome from talking to you this morning.
Splendid. And we've also got from Tool Station, of course, the wonderful Matt Norse. How are you, Matt?
Very well, Alex. Thank you. Very well.
Excellent. Alice, let's turn to you first in terms of this Tool Station survey, which suggests that a number of us are kind of still not really thinking savvy enough about ways of saving energy. And with fuel bills literally rocketing through the roof, maybe we do need to apply ourselves to thinking, well, maybe we can actually sort of save some money from the electricity bill.
Yeah, I think this is really important. This big switch on report that Toolstation have commissioned shows that 60% of people are actually worried about the cost of heating their homes this Christmas. And it's going to be a worry. In March, when the winter fuel bill comes in, it's going to be higher than normal. We all know the cost of fuel has gone up and we'd have to act now. And you say turning down the heating when you're leaving your pet at home, that's probably the last resort. There's lots and lots of other things that we can do first. We don't want our little pets freezing. I'd leave my television, radio, and the heating on for my little schnoodle anytime. But things like making sure your boiler is serviced, making sure you're heating your house.
We just seem to have lost Alice momentarily there, but hopefully she'll come back on that basis. So I'll turn to Matt in betwixt times. Matt, I mean, clearly from the Tool Station point of view, this is, you know, something which, again, you'd say it's worthwhile connecting. I think, but we'll turn to you, Matt, and then we'll come back to Alice once we've got the link established again.
Yes, indeed. And I think what we're saying is do some basic checks now. You know, forecasters are telling us it's going to get colder across much of the country from tomorrow, actually. So just do some of that basic stuff. My favourites are check. I've got pipe lagging on the outside tap. You know, that tends to perish through the summer. Check that, because actually if that freezes, you can burst pipes there. Checking the radiators are heating up properly, making sure that if they're warm throughout, because if they're cold at the top and warm at the bottom, that's a sign that they need to be bled. And if your heating is electric, some are, hasn't been used all summer, so just check that the cables are safe and frayed and the cable hasn't pulled out the plug. Just do some really basic stuff now, and it'll save you money in the long term.
Well, proving that obviously energy can actually impact in all sorts of ways. Alice, I think, has been unfrozen now, so the warmth is still there. Alice, I'm not sure what quite happened there, but it just happens. We carry on regardless. Just talking about that, I mean, again, it's really thinking sensibly about the sort of areas that, as Matt's just said, you can check as a matter of course, really.
Absolutely, and don't leave it to the last minute. we have to, we're obliged by law to get an MOT and service our cars. And yet so many of us leave our boiler, which we rely on so heavily during the winter. It's something that can keep us warm, but also keep us safe. And if we ignore things like that, then we're not going to end up, not only going to end up with a very big bill because it's running a very inefficient system, but it could also endanger us through the winter months. So it's really worth getting somebody in now at this stage, maybe call a gas safe engineer, get them to service your boiler, get them to have a look at how your system's running. Do you have a thermostat? Do you know how to bleed your radiators? So many of us aren't taught very simple things like that when we're younger. And you don't need to be ashamed of that. Just be taught once and then you can do it. It's fine. Just simple things like, okay, well, how do I do this? How do I work my thermostat? Turning down your thermostat 1 degree will just save you £80 a year. That's a no-brainer. I mean, that's a couple of pairs of shoes, isn't it?
Absolutely. And as you said, only 28% of us check our radiators are working correctly. It's very important that's sorted through as well from that perspective. Matt, from your own line on things, is this something which it seems to be a yearly message, but this year, as we've just noted in terms of fuel costs going higher, possible inclement weather coming in, it's even more important that this message is addressed?
I think you're completely right. It's a yearly message, and it's actually surprisingly consistent how when the coldest time of the year comes every year, but all the more so with energy bills going through the roof. And just starting to think about it a bit more and just doing some of those simple things you can do. Heating controls, you know, Alice mentioned there, you just drop your heating by 1 degree. But actually, so many homes don't even have proper heating controls. So, you know, if you haven't, call an engineer out and it'll pay back really, really quickly.
And Alice, clearly this applies to homes in all sorts of areas. So presumably, even if you're, whether you're a flat, whether you're a kind of an owner of a castle or a mansion, you're still looking for sort of going through these savings that can be developed as opposed to shivering in the dark, basically hoping for the best.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting. 51% of us argue about our heating and argue about what temperature we should have it at, when we should turn it on, when we should turn it off, is the hot water coming on? It's a source of tension in our homes. So I really think that actually engaging with it now, as Matt says, look at how your heating's running, look at the simple things you can do to make it run efficiently, and then kind of discuss it together and say, look, actually, we are going to turn down our heating a tiny bit. We're going to turn it down 1 degree. That's going to make a massive saving. And then we're going to look at other areas where we might be able to make savings. Using a washing up bowl can save you £25 a year. That's just nuts, isn't it? I mean, simple, simple things like that. And then it becomes quite fun. Once you know how you can save money just by being efficient with your heating bills, and this is the biggest household bill that we will pay all year, so it's worth focusing on this one. Just being, you know, having a little fun, having a little engagement with it, and actually you will really be pleasantly surprised when March comes around, hopefully, and you get that bill for the winter fuel.
You see, that, Alice, is quite simply the reason why I'd always envisage you as being the Mary Poppins of the consumer world, basically. Nobody would dare gainsay you from that point of view. It's absolutely spot on. I can't imagine any arguments whatsoever. Matt, though, I am intrigued. In your own household, do you have that debate in terms of it's time to actually lower the degrees down, et cetera? Do you actually roll out the ultimate card of saying, look, I am an electrical expert?
What I tell you, one of the reasons we don't particularly is we've installed a smart heating control. Perhaps but they weren't for everybody. They are more expensive to install, but I'm actually a big fan because it gives you just so much more control over the heating. It's when you're going away on holiday or you're going to visit family at Christmas and you realise you've left the heating on or you've left hot water on, no problem. Get your phone out, open the app and turn it down. But actually better than that, I found, is when you have turned it off because you've been away and you're coming back and you think, why no? I'll just turn the heating back on so it's nice and toasty when you get back in. So I think, you know, just having that flexibility means actually in our house, it's all happy days.
There we go. And where would you suggest people should actually go to find out further information and indeed useful tips on saving energy? Matt, we'll come to you first.
Well, in terms of our report, that can be viewed on toolstation.com. And I'm going to steal Alice's thunder with this one because we're both big fans, the Energy Saving Trust, and it's a great source of information.
And obviously, Alice Beer, is very important. You actually follow all the sort of vital things that come through on that sort of basis. So it's been awesome connecting with both of you today. Keep on keeping on. If we don't speak beforehand, have a splendid and safe and warm festive season. Alice Beer, consumer expert extraordinaire, and Matt Norse from Toolstation, huge thanks and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex.